Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Hello and welcome to Scotland. I know, I always just want to say that. I really always just want to say that. Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways is really what I meant. We're glad you're with us as always. It's available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Player FM, and now, of course, at our new home at golftripx.com. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach. He is Darren Bunch out in California. And today we are headed back to one, or some would say the favorite place for Darren and I. And that, of course, is Scotland.
Oh, that's right, Mitch. We are going to Scotland. And I got to say up top, you know, normally on a Talking Golf Getaways episode, we would be breaking out the scotch for this type of a conversation. But the logistics of trying to get this done, where David Connor, our guest today, is in Scotland. You, of course, are in Myrtle Beach, as you said, and I am out in California. That makes it 8 o'clock in the morning that we're recording here for me. So it's just a wee bit too early.
And a wee bit too early for me at 11 o'clock, having arrived home from New York at 3 a.m. this morning. I thought if I dare break out the scotch now, this whole thing could go down the tube. So
you will never get through the entire conversation.
No, so. I'm going to wait, because after we get through talking to David, I am going to definitely feel like I am in Scotland and go down and grab a little bit. But we are incredibly excited to have David with us. Darren, as you know, we call him the man in Scotland, the golf PR manager for Visit Scotland. And you, we both have had fantastic experiences and are grateful to David for all he's done for us in terms of Scottish golf and traveling over there. But you just recently had the experience again.
Oh, I got to go back in September, and we'll talk some about that trip. And a wonderful time. I saw a lot of the country that I hadn't already seen, which is what was great about it. And yeah, we're going to dive deep into that as soon as we do a little bookkeeping and business here at the beginning of the show.
Okay, and there's reason for it, because as you know by now, hopefully, Golf Trip Experts, that's us. We have a brand new home on the web at golftripx.com, and there's more and more content coming to you every day. And just a few of the things, if you have not checked it out, this is what you might have missed. One of my favorite things that I think anybody has ever done, and I'm not kidding around here, is what Darren and David McClay did, literal hole-by-hole talking yardage book account of Gamble Sands out in eastern Washington. It's just fantastic. It'll get you dreaming about Gamble Sands. If you've played it, you're going to want to go back again. It's fantastic. Recent podcasts, Emergency Nines, with a course called Scotland author Tom Coyne and the fabulous RGV Tour traveling photographer Patrick Koenig. Brian Orr's great photography, stunning stuff from the TPC Scottsdale, Spanish Bay, and Wolf Creek out in Mesquite, Nevada. And since we are talking about Scotland, you should head over there and read Darren's piece, which is wonderful, a really interesting take on blind golf shots and all that it entails, wandering the bluffs of Dunaverty on the Kintyre Peninsula. And Darren, it's just all good stuff, and there's more coming every day.
Now, we're going to ask David in a little bit about some pronunciations, but I believe that is pronounced Dunaverty.
Chime in, David. I'll get to you in a second. Dunaverty?
Dunaverty, Darren. You're correct. Yeah. Sorry, Mitch.
I stand shamed.
Also, with the new website comes new social media, so get in touch with us on our all-new social media accounts at Golf Trip Experts. That's on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And of course, as always, you can still follow Mitch at Mitch Lawrence, LAURANCE, on both Twitter and Instagram. And of course, me, you got to split them. I don't know why. I still haven't got this thing fixed through Twitter, but Getaways Golf on Twitter, at Golf Getaways on Instagram.
All right, let us get to this wonderful gentleman. As Darren said, he's a friend of ours and instrumental in helping media folks and so many others explore the rich golf courses and the history of Scotland. Obviously, Darren and I both have hearts. If you know us at all after 130-something podcasts, you know that our hearts are connected deeply to Scottish golf and all the joys that brings, which includes so much more to see and do away from the course. And in 2019, there is so much going on in Scotland. David has a lot more than just golf on his oversized plate. It's truly one of the things anyone who's been to Scotland loves, that it's not just about golf. We're going to talk to him about that part of any trip you might be planning. And for a number of years, David's been, he's one of the people that, with all that we who love golf see about Scotland and the variety of ways that David and his team get to us to try to entice us to get over there, not that he has to entice Darren and I. If he would just give us a house over there, we'd move. Well, I hope my wife didn't hear that. But but he has been the man on such a wide variety of fronts in bringing people to his home. He shepherded huge efforts to raise Scotland's profile on the world stage. And now in 2019, the Solheim Cup coming to Scotland for the first time at Glen Eagles in September. It is the 50th anniversary of Visit Scotland. And we are thrilled that David's taking a few minutes out of what is clearly an incredibly busy schedule to join us today. You can follow at Visit Scotland on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want a little bit more of a golf-specific account, you can follow at Visit Scott, S-C-O-T, Scott Golf on Twitter. David, welcome to Talking Golf Getaways, and thanks for being here at the end of your day, or getting close to it.
Mitch, Darren, thank you for having me, and thank you for such a wonderful introduction. I have to say, I feel a little bit inadequate given both of your obvious enthusiasm for golf in Scotland. I'm not sure I need to do anything else. We've got two great ambassadors and great advocates for golf over here. But seriously, we appreciate all the interest and all that you guys do for us in Scotland, helping to showcase what we have here. We obviously believe it's the best golf destination on the planet. It's certainly the only destination that can claim to be the home of golf, and we just appreciate all you guys can do for us.
Well, David, you know, we want to dive right in with that, because as Mitch said, we love it there. We love Lynx golf. We love Scottish golf. And I think Scotland, probably more than any other place in the world, is at the number one position in most people's bucket lists. And we just want to talk a little bit about why. What do you think it is that just draws golfers? If they're going to make that one great dream trip in their lives, what puts Scotland at the top of the bucket list?
I think it's one word. It's history. We are blessed with this great golfing history in Scotland. We obviously believe we have the best golf courses, but we know there are great golf courses everywhere around the world. But what they don't have is that authenticity and that history that we have here. To know that when you come and play golf over here, you're following in the footsteps of every great golfer that's ever played this game. And, you know, that just sends shivers up and down your spine whenever you tee it up at any of these great historic courses. And that's just on the golf course. We would love to think that our kind of warmness and openness and hospitality as a people really shines through as well. And you know, hopefully that's another reason why people come over and spend so much time here and keep coming back more than once.
Obviously, Darren and I agree with you. We're both history and hickory crazed humans.
Yeah.
So we're tied into it too in a very different way. I think both of us and anybody who plays hickory golf would tell you the same thing. That obviously shuts out millions of people who play, you know, those ridiculous modern clubs. But but for us to be able to do what we've done over there with the tools that we choose to play, is it adds a whole other layer to it. And the historic part of it is certainly, well, what you said. I think we love everything that you said. Tell us, let's talk a little bit about the one thing. I've been to Scotland, I think it was the fifth time, the last trip I made. Darren's been a number of times. I still have places that I haven't been to in Scotland. Darren got to hit, as he said, a number of places that he hadn't been to before. And for people who haven't been, there's such a wealth, unless you're Tom Coyne, who just said, the hell with it, I'm going to play them all. Most people aren't like that. But there's major reasons, regions. Can you kind of give us an overview of the major regions to consider when somebody's planning a Scotland getaway? Is there a way to break it down And based on what? That's one of the challenges, is that there's so much to see and do.
It is one of the challenges, but it's also, you know, I think one of the great strengths of golf in Scotland. And just touching back on Tom Coyne, I don't think anybody's played as much golf in Scotland as Tom Coyne have. Yeah. I certainly haven't. I've lived here all my life, and there's still places I haven't seen and places I want to go. And as I said, that is a great strength, is that Scotland is blessed with multiple regions of great golf. And it's something that we try and get across to people when they're coming over here, is to not just see it as a once-in-a-lifetime trip. It's so easy to get here, particularly from the East Coast, but even for yourself, Darren, over on the West. The flight routes in here are much better. You know, the flights, you can sleep overnight and get up and, you know, hopefully get rid of that jet lag. And rather than rushing the entire length and breadth of the country trying to fit in every great golf course that you've ever heard of, just concentrate on one or two specific regions. And the great thing is, as I said earlier, we've got so many of those regions. We tend to kind of try and split it up into six different regions in Scotland, from the southwest, where you've got Ayrshire and the great heartlands of golf down there, where the Open was born at Prestwick and Royal Trinan-Tunbury. And then that brings in your island golf courses out into Islay and Macrahanish. And then moving across to the East Coast, you've got East Lothian, all the great golf courses there. Move up a little bit, you've got Fife. Up a little bit further, there's Aberdeenshire. And then you've got the Highlands and the northwest of Scotland. So that's five great golfing regions. And then you've got central Scotland as well, which obviously takes in Glasgow and Edinburgh, are two great cities, they're both awash with golf courses and so much else to see and do away from the golf course as well. And what we tend to try and say is, don't rush the entire length of the country on one trip. If you want to go and spend your entire trip in one region and not spend your entire life on the road, you will find plenty of golf courses to go and play and plenty of things to go and see and do away from the course as well.
I think that's a great point. And I wanted to get back to one thing, David, before we move on, though. I got schooled pretty good the other day talking to David McClay Kidd about Macrahanish, and he made me pronounce it over and over and over again to really get the back of the throat Macrahanish going. So I want to hear you pronounce that in your best way. And then the other word that you used when you talked about the very first region, what we here in the States would read as Ayrshire, is certainly not pronounced that way. So tell me both of those, Macrahanish and what I believe is Ayrshire, right?
Yeah, you're correct. And, you know, Macrahanish, you know, that CH is very famous in Scots. You've got the lochs and glens. You know, when we hear people call them lochs we usually say Macrahanish just for ease, but yeah, you're right. If you're putting on your proper Scottish brogue, it is definitely Macrahanish. David McClay Kidd was spot on there. And then when it comes to Ayrshire, it's the sort of suffix, the shire, tends to be kind of shortened just into Ayrshire, to be honest. There's a lot more shires down in England. There's certainly everywhere you go, there's a shire. I think similar to us, they kind of tend to shorten that suffix as well, just for ease and quickness of language.
Darren, before we move on, I want to hear you say Macrahanish one more time, because you did it so beautifully.
Macrahanish.
Oh, good, good.
I can't get that back of the throat part. And I'm not joking, though. Kid made me say it like five or six times, because the next story, we're going to mention this a little bit later, but the next story I'm writing about my piece, about my trip back in September, will be the part on the Kintyre Peninsula and playing the Macrahanish courses after I started my trip at Dunaverty, which we've already written about. So, it was a fun. It's always fun talking to David Kidd, but it was fun just having him give me a hard time for a few minutes before we got rolling. So, now, David, you kind of hit on this in the previous question, but We want to talk a little bit about best strategies for planning a week-long Scotland adventure. Now, when we've been there in the past, my first trip centered more on East Lothian. When Mitch went with me, we centered more up on the Highlands and went to the north, went all the way up to Brora. But in this trip I did in September, I literally drove all over the country. And it's not, I think the good thing about the size of Scotland is that you can do that. You can drive all the way out to Machearhannish and all the way back. And it's not like trying to drive across multiple states here in the West where it takes you a day's worth of driving time. I don't think I sacrificed any golf in exchange for the driving. So, I just talk a little bit about that, how you would suggest for friends coming over to kind of plan their week-long Scotland adventure.
I think that's a fair point about the driving, particularly to the listeners in the US. We know you guys think nothing of jumping in the car and driving for 3, 4, 5 hours straight. For us, that's a long drive. The roads over here are a little bit different as well, so you have to take that into account. You know, well, you could look at a specific distance and think, well, you know, that's not particularly far. Particularly out in the Western Isles and up in the Highlands, the roads can be a little bit smaller, shall we say, than you guys are used to. But you're right in what you say. We're not a huge country, so you can go from top to bottom or east to west in a day. We certainly had no problem putting you to work, Darren. You were over here working. When your listeners are over, they're perhaps over for a little bit more fun. And what we would tend to suggest is to maximise your time off the golf course by relaxing, seeing a few bits and pieces away from the course, rather than killing yourself driving from location to location, which, you know, if you're on a 7-day itinerary and you're spending 2 to 3 hours a day in a car playing 18 or maybe even 36 holes of golf, there may even be, dare I say it, some whiskey involved in the evening. You know, you're very quickly going to catch up with you. So certainly our recommendation is to base yourself in a few different locations during your 7-day trip and really, really explore and get under the skin of that region. And the reason, one of the main reasons I like to suggest that is that within every region, there's going to be bucket list courses that your guys back home in your clubhouse will have heard of. So you can tick them off, not a problem. But then there's going to be other courses that they haven't heard of. And you can get in there and you can be the first one in your club to have played that. And then when you go back, you've got the bragging rights. And one of the favourite stories that I tell people, it came from your guys' trip a couple of years ago when you did that Aberdeenshire and Highlands route up the kind of east and north coast. And you guys came back and said, well, we've played some great courses, but your favourite one out of all of them was Fraserburgh, which was brilliant for me to hear, because that's not a course that we would generally have thousands and thousands of golfers coming over from North America to come and play, because it's not your Cruden Bay or your Royal Aberdeen or Castle Stewart or Royal Dornoch. You know, it's not as well known there. But that kind of feedback was really special to hear. And, I think if more Americans went back and were bragging about the courses that their mates haven't played, you know, I think that would start to make a real difference.
Well, I think that's a great point too. We hit a lot of courses on that trip that aren't necessarily bucket list courses in regards to what you would get if you talked to, you know, if you pulled a number of golfers here in the States, because obviously Fraserburgh, we played Tain, which we absolutely loved. Mitch and I had a blast there. We went all the way up to Brora, which Brora probably gets mentioned more on this podcast in terms of the best course nobody really knows about than any other golf course. So, you know, I think that's a great point. I want to ask you one other thing about planning a trip, and I haven't done this yet. I don't know if Mitch did in the old days or not, but I have run into more and more people who are using the train, and especially over in Ayrshire, you know, because the train line literally runs along. You know, one of the best pictures I shot in September was the train flying by one of the greens at Royal Troon. you know, talk a little bit about the potential for using the train both over in the Edinburgh area and in the Ayrshire area, and if there are any other areas that you can use that kind of transit instead of having to hop into a rental car and trying to figure out how to drive on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Darren. In fact, the train lines were the kind of reason that golf tourism in Scotland took off. Because if you think, you know, way back when these golf courses were popping up all up and down the coast, the only way for people to get there back in the day was horse and cart or by walking. And the train line really opened up these courses to so many more people from the Central Belt and even from down south in England as well. So it's a really interesting point you make. And Ayrshire, you talked about that train line down there. I'm not sure there's a train line anywhere else in the world that passes so many golf courses. It is literally one after the other after the other. And it's not even on one side of the track as well. It's on both sides. You feel surrounded. I did that journey a few months ago for the first time ever in my life, and I was blown away by the sheer number of courses that you passed on that journey. And everywhere you stop down there, some of them you're within a walk from the golf course. Prestwick, I know, is extremely close, and there are a couple of others that are very close. And then other than that, you're maybe talking a 5 or a 10 minute taxi ride, or even if you want to jump on a bus, you can get there as well. East Lothian is similar. There's a great train line that heads out towards round the coast and then down towards Berwick, and again, you know, you can jump off the train and you're within 5 or 10 minutes taxi ride of 10 or 15 great golf courses. St Andrews used to have a train line coming right into it. The road hole is obviously famous for the old railway sidings there. No longer the case, but just along the road, again, 10, 15 minutes along the road in Lookers, you can jump off a train and get a bus or a taxi along to there. And similar, Glen Eagles as well is another fine example of a terrific resort, and the train literally stops outside its front door, and you're 2 minutes away from a golf course jumping off the train. So that is a great way to get around if you don't fancy coming over and hiring a car, and as you say, learning to drive on the correct side of the road.
And in the correct side of the car.
Indeed.
Yeah, that was a great question, Darren. I have traveled by train. In 2010, when I went over, I wound up taking a train to get to St. Andrews, to get close to St. Andrews. And one of the things Darren and I talk about a lot on the show, relative to destination travel, we talk about it when we go to Bandon or the big destinations here in the States that are kind of out off the beaten path, is it gives you a chance to build excitement and to dream about what you're doing and where you're going. And when you're in a car, obviously you can't do that because you're concerned about staying out of the way of the truck that's heading right into you as you turn around a curve. But I love the trains. I wish we had them more in the States here. I always bemoan that fact. And you mentioned Glen Eagles, and that was brilliant on your part, David, as a segue into my next question. I don't know how you did it, but you did. It's a great example. Glen Eagles is a good example of how tough it has to be sometimes, or how tough it is sometimes, to plan to play these lesser known courses that we're talking about in Scotland. The reason I say it, people know the Glen Eagles, the PGA Centenary course gets the big play, the 2014 Ryder Cup, obviously exposed to all that, the 2019 Solheim Cup, which I mentioned before. And I know you're excited about, and everybody there is really excited, that's coming to Glen Eagles. But if you go and you just try to get on the Centenary course because of the fact that you've seen it, you're going to miss out on, for me, what was definitely one of the highlights of any time I've ever been in Scotland, which was the King's Course, and also the Queen's Course, which a lot of people, even if they know the King's Course, they're not aware of the Queen's Course. So you're going to be missing a lot. Those kinds of places we talked about, Fraserburgh and Tain and Brora and Merker is another one. And, you know, the hidden gems that most golf travelers might not think about. Just talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, no question. And Glen Eagles is a great example of that, actually, just in kind of microcosm, because you're right, in terms of the kind of global media exposure that the Ryder Cup afforded the PGA Centenary course, and as you mentioned, the upcoming Solheim Cup as well. You know, that's the one that certainly in the last 10, 15, 20 years, the course that people would associate with Glen Eagles. But you pointed out both the King's and Queen's courses are outstanding golf courses. Both actually celebrate their centenary year this year. They were both completed in 1919. So that those courses were effectively what Glen Eagles was built on and what the resort became known for. Particularly the King's course, you know, that's certainly seen as certainly the jewel in the crown of potentially even the three courses, but certainly people would probably tend to rank it above the Queen's, but that would be to do the Queen's a bit of a disservice as well. I know many golf writers who prefer the Queen's because it's such a beautiful, relaxing round of golf. But the great thing about both of those courses, the King's and the Queen's, is that it's very much like playing an inland links course, because the quality of the turf is so good that you get that really nice thud when you play the ball that you would tend to think you only get on a links course. And both of those courses stack up really well. The PGA Centenary course is a beautiful course, and it was brilliant for the Ryder Cup, and it will be great for the Solheim Cup, because it's a very good match play course, and also it was built as a stadium course. So much like the PGA National out in France, which we've seen at the Ryder Cup, it's got very steep bankings around the course, and it's a great golf course for watching golf. But I think if you asked traditionalists, they would both probably prefer the King's and Queen's course. The PGA Centenary course, designed obviously by Jack Nicklaus, does have a little bit more of an American feel, which your listeners will be a bit more accustomed to and a bit more attuned to. So, you know, we would certainly point them in the direction of the King's and the Queen's if they want a bit more of an authentic golfing experience in Scotland.
Well, the reason that I brought it up, and I think people will be interested too, is when I went to Glen Eagles, it was with my wife, who's a golfer. I was more in touch with the history of the game, but not as much as I am now, and absolutely was blown away by the King's course. It was the kind of combination of holes and walk and scenery and challenge that I was really unprepared for. It was my first introduction really to James Braid. And we didn't get to play the Queens, but I want to go back and I have to say it. It would be fun to play the centenary. This is what happens when you get up after 3 o'clock in the morning. The centenary course. It'd be fun to play that.
I think you have been on the whiskey.
Yeah, no. It would be fun to play the centenary course, obviously, like you said, because you could say, well, I played it. But for my money, the Kings, and then if I get to play the Queens, would be the reason I would go back there. And Darren, you remember when we had David McClay Kidd on the first time and he was telling us about his father, the great Jimmy Kidd, and the history that they both had there at Glen Eagles. There's a lot to recommend the whole Glen Eagles experience, I think.
Yeah, and the hotel, when I went and played the course in around the Ryder Cup, I didn't even get to stay at the resort. And I mean, the hotel itself is just, it's unbelievable. I think our friend Tom Mackin said it's one of the cooler places he's ever stayed. So, I mean, there's just so much to that property, right, David?
It's a special place, actually. It really is. It's got everything within that one location. It's known as a golf resort, but there's a lot of other things to do there as well. I think Glen Eagles' own tagline is a glorious playground, and I find it difficult to argue with that. We're really looking forward to the reaction from the Solheim Cup teams in September, because I think traditionally where they've tended to play, they very rarely have the benefit of staying on site for these matches. So the fact that, you know, their first tee is going to be 2 minutes from the hotel room, the practice facilities are going to be 2 minutes from the hotel room, that will really just add to that kind of sense of drama and excitement from the two teams as well, and hopefully elevate that event to another level as well, which is one of the reasons we were so desperate to get it back into Scotland after hosting the Ryder Cup, is we really want to give that event or that property back to the Ladies European Tour at an elevated level, and Glen Eagles, I think, will really help us to do that.
Darren, before you move on, I just got on the website, the Glen Eagles website, which is absolutely beautiful, by the way. And it says, on the menu, it says golf and pursuits, which I love. And then it has this list, to the point that David's making. Golf, shooting, tennis, riding, off-road driving, falconry, gun dogs, which I don't know that I've ever heard before, archery, fishing, and then other activities. I don't know if there are other activities. There's obviously a lot to do.
That's outstanding. You know, one thing too, in talking about the hidden gems, kind of that's where Mitch was headed with this, with talking about the Kings and Queens courses. I think something unique to the UK, and especially that I have experienced in Scotland, is the accessibility of these small clubs that have these courses that the membership is incredibly proud of, and you're able to go over and really feel like a member for a day. You get that a lot in the States, where people use that as a marketing slogan. But when you go to places like Dunbar down in East Lothian, we talked about it with Fraserburgh and Tain. I'm trying to think of other places that I went on this trip. Dunaverty was that way when I was out there. It was just a group of guys basically sitting around the clubhouse on an afternoon who were just incredibly welcoming. You've got places like Ely and Crail that are around St. Andrews. There are so many of those, and those memberships want people to come see their golf courses, these historic golf courses that have been there for so long, because they just love them and they want to share them with the world.
You're right. They're really proud of their courses. They want to show them off. But not just that, they're not just golf courses, they're golf clubs. I think that really comes across, like you say, after your round, even during the round, before the round, if you're speaking and interacting with either the staff or the other members within those clubs, very often they will make you feel as if you're a member of that club for the day, and it's not just a slogan. And that's a really important part of what we try and get across. It's that kind of spirit of Scotland, that thing that you can only feel it. It's not really tangible. You can just feel that kind of spirit coming through the people. And we've tried to kind of bottle that and use it in marketing slogans and all the rest of it, but it's just so hard to do because it's so intangible. But I think you're absolutely right. It just comes across when you meet and interact with people over here.
One of the places that I encountered in September that really surprised me to that extent, and one of the things I like doing now, especially if I'm working with somebody else to help me plan an itinerary, is to say, look, send me some places that I might not think of. And one of the more interesting stories that I heard was that of I guess it's Glasgow Golf Club that has their original course in Glasgow, but they built a second course way back when out near the coast. It's actually right next door to Western Gales. And so that when the weather was bad inland, you could still go out and you could play, the membership could go play near the course. And so that course, which I guess would be considered Glasgow Gales, it's got a couple of different names. It's right behind the Gales Hotel, which is a great place to stay and kind of make a home base for the Ayrshire area. But it was just this cool little fun track with wonderful people. The head pro there is outstanding. I played with one of the assistants, a young lady who's trying to become a professional golfer. She was fantastic. And it was just a fun golf course. And it was one of those places that made me remember why I love Scotland so much, for the combination of the people and the golf, David.
Yeah, that's so great to hear. It makes my job so much easier when we've obviously got these great golf courses, but when people come over and they feel so welcomed, they're going to go back and they're going to tell their friends and they're going to post on social media and they're going to come back. And that's the great thing, is that they can come back and experience whole different regions and whole new golf courses and whole new golf clubs. But hopefully the experience will be exactly the same as what they had before, and continue to be that welcoming way. That's what we pride ourselves on as Scots, and I'm delighted to hear that was your experience.
Darren, I just want to ask him, do you have a couple of hidden gems yourself? Do you have places? Darren's going to kind of get into the St. Andrews area and some courses around there for people who may choose St. Andrews. But do you have, I'm putting you on the spot here, because you represent all of Scotland.
Give us a couple, David, that maybe we haven't talked about.
I came across a golf course recently, and I have to admit, to my shame, as you know, promoter of all things golf in Scotland, it hadn't been on my radar, but it's Cullen Golf Club up on the north coast, just along the road from Fraserburgh, actually. I hadn't come across it before. I've only recently kind of become aware of it and seen some great images and some great footage from it. And it's just the most visually stunning place. I've been in touch with some of the members and the secretary there, and they are so willing to promote the golf club. They're so desperate for people to come there and see this great golf course that they have. It's on my bucket. I haven't played it. I've only seen pictures and seen footage. It's on my bucket list to go and tick off this year. Because to my shame, I haven't been and played all of our 600 golf courses yet. There's still a few to tick off the list. But that's certainly one of the hidden gems, if you like, that I'm desperate to go and play this year. Another one that I had the pleasure of just playing towards the end of last year, there's a little course called Kilspindie in East Lothian. I don't know if either of you guys have played it. It sits just across the bay from Gullen, which is obviously well known, and the kind of courses that sit on that hill at Gullen. And it is the perfect golf course, I think, to play either as you've just come off the flight and you're looking for an introduction to what golf in Scotland is all about, or if you're looking for something that isn't going to beat you up. It's not a 6,000 or 7,000 yard monster, but it's just full of variety, full of great shot making holes, and a really, really friendly membership as well. So Kilspindie was probably my favourite round of last year. And I used modern equipment, to my shame, but I didn't even...
How dare you?
I left the driver and the metal wood and the hybrid in the bag, and I went out there and just played it with irons, and it was the most fun I had on a golf course all last year.
Isn't it great?
I have to say one thing. On my very first trip that I took... one of the great regrets of that trip, and I didn't know any better at that time. I was part of a group, and we were hitting all the big bucket lists. We played Muirfield. I was over there for a media event because it was anticipation of the Open at Muirfield. But we stayed at Craigielaw, which had just opened their lodge at the time. But we didn't play Craigielaw. And then right over the stone wall from Craigielaw is Kilspindie. And so those two courses were right there staring me in the face. I actually have photography of both of them, but didn't play either one. And one of these days I need to go back, stay at Craigielaw again and make sure I play both of those golf courses, because they do. They both look like a lot of fun. And just being there, you know, side by side, like so many golf courses you find in Scotland, where one was built and then the one was built right next door. And it really makes for a great experience. I wanted to talk about a little bit about St. Andrews, and everybody knows all the bucket listy things from St. Andrews, but there's so much around there that's not part of the Home of Golf complex, the old course, the new course, Jubilee, the Castle course, all those. And like in my case, I played Ely, I played both courses at Crail. I stayed at this wonderful little place that I think only has four rooms, the Inn at King's Barnes, which is right around the corner from King's Barnes Golf Club, which we have talked about quite a bit on the podcast. You know, offer up some tips for somebody who wants to do maybe a little bit different spin on a St. Andrews-centric vacation.
You mean still staying in St. Andrews?
Well, you could stay in St. Andrews, or you could venture out to you know, like I said, to stay at the inn at King's Barnes. I ran into some guys when I was playing at Crail. I ran into two gentlemen. I played a few holes with them. They actually had renovated another home out there in the countryside on the way to Ely, I think it was, that they rent out. I mean, there's a lot of smaller lodging out there, and there's certainly a lot of golf out in the Fife area that people, I think, probably just don't know about.
Oh, but without a shadow of a doubt, yeah. I mean, St. Andrews is well known. You know, you've kind of touched on that, and they've got their great courses. The Old, obviously, is the one that everybody wants to go and play there. It overshadows, to be fair, what are six other outstanding golf courses within the St. Andrews Links Trust portfolio of courses. The Jubilee, I think, is one of the great golf courses up there. So much fun to play, and again, it's not going to beat you up too much. And the Castle Course, Mr. McQuay Kidd, obviously, one of his creations as well. But St. Andrews is known, or sorry, not St. Andrews, Fife itself is known for its coastlines. Even if you head inland, there's a couple of really, really great golf courses. It's at Scotts Craig, is I think the 13th oldest golf club in the world. That's a beautiful golf course, a little bit more of a heathland, but still that nice, that nice firm turf. And equally, Lady Bank as well is another great golf course that's inland. And again, if you tell some of your club mates that you came to Fife and you played some inland courses, that would seem a bit strange. But again, you've then got a bit more bragging rights to go back to your club and brag about courses that certainly none of your mates will have played. And when it comes to places to stay, you're absolutely right in that everybody wants to be in St. Andrews. It's a really special place. It's got a great feel and a great vibe about it, and there's nothing better than waking up in the morning and being able to walk to the golf course. You see everybody walking around with golf bags. You actually look strange in St. Andrews if you're walking around not carrying a golf bag or not in golf clothing. But no matter where you stay, you can always go into St. Andrews for a day. That's fine. As you say, there's some great courses, hotels and guest houses outside of St. Andrews, and there's plenty of them. And the great thing about them, as you said, that the inn only had four rooms, you feel, I suppose, a little bit more special and a little bit more catered for, and that more homely experience. And there'll be many, many examples of that throughout Fife that they'll be listed on our website, visitscotland.com. We'll have a list of all the various places that you can stay. And don't be swayed by having to go and stay in St. Andrews. Fife itself as a region, the Kingdom of Fife as it's known, is a beautiful region and certainly one that we would encourage people to get out and explore.
Oh, then there's so much great stuff out in there. And like you said, the inn at King's Barnes, I mean, sitting in their little pub where there's, you know, only a handful of people at night, it really is a true, just very cool, quaint experience. I wanted to give a quick shout out to a couple other places that we haven't been that I want to say, as you know, our friend Eric Hart, who works with us here at Golf Trip X, he's going to be lobbying you again very soon to get back out to Scotland. And I was looking at a proposed itinerary he was looking at, and he has a lot of these kind of things that maybe none of us have done before. Courses like Panmure, which is near Carnoustie, and I think a lot of people don't know about. Or out on the other side of Kintyre, you started talking about the islands and things like that, going all the way out to the Machree, where they've done a lot of work in the past. I mean, there are just all these, it's like you said, you haven't gotten to all of them, but there are so many of these little just fun golf experiences that you could come over and not do any of the bucket list courses and probably still have the most memorable vacation you've ever had.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, there's so much strength and depth of the golf courses over here. And I think that's one of the things that actually does set Scotland apart from, dare I say it, the likes of Ireland, which is obviously a wonderful golfing destination, some great courses. But I think after you kind of scratch the surface of their kind of top-notch courses, there's maybe not as much strength and depth underneath those. I think Scotland's real strength is that you scratch the surface underneath the the championship courses that we've all heard of, and you're still left with what are really truly world-class golf courses that if they were in any other country in the world, they would actually be classed as probably one of the best, some of the best courses in that country. And that, I, as I said, that's a real strength. And you could actually flip, I've got our Golf in Scotland guide here, and it's basically got every single golf course in Scotland listed and what region it's in and some tips, hints and tips. You could flick through this and stop on any given page and put your finger on a golf course, and I guarantee you're going to go there and have a great time, you know, any one of the 600 golf courses that we've got.
Perfect. Well, we have a couple more questions. We know you're busy, end of the day, but we have a couple more we want to ask you. We got a question from one of our Twitter friends, followers, at Jeff Galowitz asked, what are some of the must-see items that aren't golf-related through Scotland? Now, again, like the golf courses, this entails so much that you couldn't possibly do it justice. I know from the perspective, and this was a brilliant plan by you, was to have Outlander come out.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to take the credit for that. Yeah.
That was genius, because I know for people I talk to who've never been there, and this is the truth, they say that watching that show has literally made them want to go and explore the country in a way they never thought they really cared about before. But some other things that that aren't golf-related that you would just suggest off the top of your head?
Again, it does depend on where your interests lie. And we would like to think that wherever your interests lie, we've got something for you, whether it's enjoying the great outdoors. We've got some you know, amazing glens, hills, coastlines to go and explore, with the walks, some amazing forests that you can walk through. But if you're a little bit more of a city slicker, you like your you know, your nights out and your places to go and eat. Both Edinburgh and Glasgow, to be honest, the likes of Inverness and Dundee and Perth, are great cities to go and explore as well. It really is hard to kind of pick out specific tourist attractions. We know the likes of Edinburgh Castle is, I think that's probably Scotland's number one tourist attraction in terms of the number of visitors it gets through the door, and it's an amazing, amazing attraction, sitting right in the heart of Edinburgh on the top of an extinct volcano. For me, you know, Edinburgh is such a scenic city. There's so much to go and see and do there, and it's a great addition to any golf trip, especially if you happen to find yourself in Scotland during August. The population of Edinburgh itself, I think something like doubles. It's something crazy because of the festivals that go on in Edinburgh. And on every street corner and in every street, there's some sort of street act, and there's comedy shows and music festivals. And it's a great, great time to be in Edinburgh if you happen to be there in August as well. So if you fancy tagging that onto a golf trip, you certainly wouldn't go too far amiss. Another great thing that people obviously associate with Scotland is whiskey.
You guys have whiskey?
Well, yeah, some people say, yeah. Some people
oh,
say.
My goodness.
We've got plenty of distilleries that are great fun to go and visit. Some people say once you've seen one distillery, you've seen them all, but they've all got their little intricacies. And their stories and their history, it's one of my favourite things is in the various regions that you go and visit a distillery, and there's always a great story to tell. Campbelltown, actually, where you were obviously with Macrahanish and Dunaverty, that used to be I think that was called the whisky capital of the world at some point, and there was dozens and dozens of distilleries down there. I think there's maybe only two or three now, but you know, the history down there in terms of whisky production is fantastic.
I was glad you mentioned Dundee. It's a cool little town as well, a little coastal town, and I got to stay there for a night. They had just opened, I think, a brand new museum of some kind or something like that, didn't they?
Correct. Yeah, the new V&A Museum, which is the Victoria and Albert. There's a very famous Victoria and Albert Museum down in London. They were looking for somewhere else to open a new one, and Dundee came out top. And if you haven't seen pictures of this building, it looks absolutely incredible. It's part of a kind of redevelopment of Dundee's waterfront, and this building I'm no expert on architecture, but I think it's designed on to look like a ship, so it kind of overhangs out into the water, and it just looks absolutely stunning. Like I say, I'm no architecture expert, but that's certainly from what I've seen, that would be well worth a visit. And Dundee itself is undergoing a bit of a renaissance as well. That waterfront redevelopment is a lovely place to go and eat and drink and just have a wander around.
Yeah, I stayed at the, Mitch, you will love this because you like just watching people have fun. And I stayed at the Apex Hotel there, and my window overlooked the water, and it was a basically like a water park. So I woke up in the morning, I came back up from breakfast, I'm looking out, and there are just kids doing this insane kind of obstacle course out on top of the water. And in the meantime, other people are doing zip lines. And I mean, as a family place, I texted Eric immediately when I was there. And I said, look, if you're ever bringing your family over, you got to come stay here, because this place just looks like it's insane amount of fun for kids to have right there. And then the building you mentioned, the museum, it's fantastic. I didn't get to go inside, obviously, when I was there back in September, but it's just an amazing looking piece of architecture, and it really is quite something. And then, you know, you mentioned the castles. You really can't. One of the things I love about driving around the country is that you happen upon so many castles and estate houses and you know, country homes and all these different things. You can't swing a 9-iron in the country without running into a castle. And it's just so beautiful. I remember on the drive to Kintyre, you know, I was coming along, and I came around a corner and went up over this little bridge, and I looked off to the right, and it just opens up to this ginormous house and this beautiful estate. And I thought, that's just something you don't see, especially where I live in the West, here in California. You just don't get those unexpected surprises of that type of grandeur that you find when you're driving around Scotland.
You're absolutely right. I have to admit, I wish I knew a little bit more about the history of some of them. I'm the same when I go driving up north or you know, wherever it is in Scotland. You can turn a corner and then just, wow, you're blown away by this ancient structure sat beside a loch or a river or on top of a hill, and you just say, how on earth did they get that there 800 years ago? How did they build that? It's exceptional. And like I said, I wish I knew more. I'm sure there's an app that you must be able to point at it and it'll tell you what it is.
That's a good idea.
And Darren?
I've just patented that right there.
Did you hear how David said loch?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just checking.
It's not locked. It's not lost on me.
All right.
That I can't do it, Mitch. My vocal cords just don't do it. Okay. I need to go live over there for about 20 years, and I'll be right there with the rest of you guys.
You'll be locked in.
That's right. Very nice.
Shall we get to the last of our questions? Obviously, we could talk to you forever, which probably wouldn't be good for you. But
would be great for us.
Great for us. One of the things that we did definitely want to touch on, because this is a fantastic new campaign for Visit Scotland, and that is the hashtag Her Scotland campaign. Some highlights from you about why the country lends itself. You know, I don't think, talk enough about buddy trips for women. And the possibilities that women actually don't want to be with us. I know that's hard to believe, but that they would rather go and do what guys do and say, okay, I'm going with my, and this is a great campaign that you have started. So talk a little bit about the hashtag Her Scotland campaign and trips that women can take now.
Yeah, it's something we're really proud of, actually, and something we're really passionate, given that way back in the day, our country gave birth to this brilliant game. And I suppose it's still a bit sad that it is seen as a male-dominated game. Thankfully, that certainly seems to be changing. And we've seen a number of brilliant initiatives out there to encourage more women to take up golf, which we think is great. But then we thought, well, we need to take that a stage further. And once they've taken up golf, and once they feel confident playing, and they're playing with friends, etc., we need to encourage them to get out and travelling and going on golfing holidays with their friends. There's no greater holiday than spending 7 days traveling around a country or a region with your friends, playing golf, having a drink, having great food. And it just seemed to us a no-brainer that we see groups of guys coming over, that why aren't we seeing the same number of women coming to Scotland? To throw a figure at you, only 12% of our golfing visitors currently are female, which we think is far, far too low. We obviously want to grow that. And anecdotally, we think that women golfers probably see Scotland as a destination that's perhaps only for highly skilled or highly competent golfers. They're maybe put off a little bit by, you know, some of the reports of weather. Yes, we have rain and we have wind, but we've also got beautiful sunny skies and some beautiful days as well. And, you know, maybe they think of us as a golf-only destination, and there's not as much to see and do away from the course as well. So that was one of the reasons we started that campaign, just to try and dispel a few of those myths and really show that golf in Scotland is for everyone. It's how the game was founded back here. It's the kind of founding principle of golf clubs up and down the country. You know, we're just desperate to get more people here in general playing golf, but certainly more groups of women. And if they want to bring their husbands, then that's absolutely fine.
I think it's a great point you make, though, about because I know I've had talks with my wife also, and Darren, I know you've talked to women who feel this way too, that some places, some destinations, they literally just think it's going to be too hard for me. Those courses are going to be too hard for me. And it's really, I don't think, true. So it's a great point to be able to get that word out with the campaign you're doing, David.
And I would think Lynx Golf lends itself better to people, not to people who are less skilled, but because of the ground game, you can do a lot more. You can play a lot different types of shots and different types of games. So to me, that would be a better kind of field of play for a broader swath of people, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
No, I would agree. There's certainly less forced carries. Mm-hmm. You know, you can play a little bit more of a ground game. You can perhaps get away with a few more bad shots. And I think, I mean, obviously, we're not just talking about women here. We're talking about golfers in general. But I think men who play the game are perhaps a little bit more bullish, and you know, regardless of the fact that they might not be a highly skilled golfer, they'll still make that decision to go and travel to play golf. And you know, they're not really too bothered about whether they slash it about a golf course, whereas women are maybe tend to be a little bit more reserved about that. So it's just trying to get that across, that you know, we have golf courses here for everyone. Yes, we have difficult golf courses, but we've also got golf courses that are open and fair for everyone. And that's what the whole different tee system's for as well. I'm certainly one of those that advocate that you should play regardless of gender or age. You should play from whatever tees actually suit your golfing ability rather than being men's, ladies or junior tees.
What a novel idea. Darren and I are both big on that. David, as I said, we could spend a lot more time, and I don't think there's anybody who's a better spokesperson for what Scotland has to offer than you. And I know Darren feels the same way. We're both thrilled to have the chance to spend some time. And there's going to be a lot more coming, not only on our on Talking Golf Getaways on the podcast. Darren's going to do a lot of writing, a chapter-by-chapter account, so to speak, of his September journey, crisscrossed the country about four times that we can figure out. I think he did it more, and he just doesn't want to tell anybody. That'll be coming to golftripx.com. And thanks for everything that you do. I there's no other way to put it. You've been fantastic to us and to thousands of golfers who get a chance to go to Scotland through the work that you've done and are doing now.
No, I said it at the start of the show, and I genuinely appreciate all of your passion for golf in Scotland. It certainly makes my job easier when you guys are out there singing our virtues as well.
Well, Dee, I know you've enjoyed it. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to David, you know, some more in the future, maybe as we get closer to Solheim Cup time. I look forward to that. I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. It's going to bring a whole new vibe to that part of Scotland too. So make sure if you're on Twitter, again, follow at Visit Scotland and at Visit Scott Golf. And on Instagram at Visit Scotland. A lot of great content in both of those places, as always.
And as always, we want to thank the listeners out there, especially those of you who hit us with the comments, criticisms, ideas, hammering away at us on Twitter all the time. We couldn't do it without you. Keep the conversation going on social media. Please don't hesitate to rate us on iTunes. Check out the website at golftripx.com. Poke around, read and share the stories, even click on the ads. That's how we make our money so we can afford to keep spotlighting the best in golf travel.
Which is what we love to do. Thanks again to David Connor. David, we'll see you hopefully soon.
Definitely.
We all love, Darren and I love going to Scotland. And for those of you who haven't been there, you're going to be dreaming about it. Just do that thing. Keep dreaming. Keep running down the dream. Thanks for being with us. It's a lot. Yeah, running down the dream.